Welcome to Argonex's second quarter 2016 business update and half-year financial results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a question and answer session to follow. I would now like to introduce Yoko Komen, Corporate Communications Manager at Argonex.
Good afternoon, everybody. A press release with the Argonex second quarter business update and half-year 2016 financial results became available at 7 a.m. Central European Time today and can also be found on the News and Events section on our website. Before we start, I would like to go to slide 2. As a reminder, forward-looking statements may be presented during this teleconference. They may include statements about our future expectations, clinical development and regulatory timelines, the potential success of our product candidates, financial projections, and upcoming milestones. Actual results may differ materially from those indicated by these statements. Argonex is not under any obligation to update statements regarding the future or to conform those statements in relation to actual results unless this is required by law. I'm joined on the call today by Tim van Hauwermeiren, CEO of Argonex, and Eric Castaldi, our CFO. On slide 3, you will see a brief agenda for the call. After a brief corporate introduction, Tim will walk through updates from each of our clinical programs, as well as expected next steps. He will also update you on our ongoing partnerships, and Eric will then provide half-year financial results for 2016, followed by some closing remarks by Tim and a Q&A. I would now like to turn the call over to CEO Tim van Hauwermeiren.
Thank you, Jochen. Good afternoon, everybody. 2016 has been an unprecedented year so far for Argonex, and one where we feel we have, one, executed strongly on our pipeline promises, two, focused on strategic and lucrative business development opportunities, and three, positioned ourselves financially to have the flexibility to continue this momentum through to important clinical development milestones. Before diving into the presentation, I would like to run through the key milestones that have led to our most productive year yet. First, we announced a collaboration with AbbVie to develop and commercialize Argonex 115, our immuno-oncology asset targeting GARP. This led to an upfront payment of $40 million and significant validation of our platform. Two, we reported data from all three of our wholly owned programs, including Argonex 113, Argonex 110, and Argonex 111, each of which showed strong safety profiles and biological activity across the board. We believe these early results help to de-risk our pipeline plans going forward. We will be launching phase 2 proof-of-concept studies this year for both Argonex 110 and Argonex 113, and with Argonex 111, we will be wrapping up the phase 1b study and intend to then look for a partner. I will discuss this more later in the call. And finally, to support all of these programs, we raised €30 million through a private placement with several top-tier U.S. investors. These milestones together have positioned us firmly for success and have propelled us forward as a mature drug development company with a novel platform and an advanced pipeline in several exciting indications. I would now like to move to slide 5 to lay out our core value drivers. We are an antibody specialist company with a clear focus on cancer and severe autoimmune diseases. These are two therapeutic areas that have been revolutionized by therapeutic antibodies in the past and which we believe will continue to be disrupted by novel antibody therapeutics going forward. We create value for the company in two ways. One is by growing our wholly owned product portfolio, including Argonex 110, 11, and 13, and the other is by building strategic alliances, including ours with Shire, Leo, and the one we announced with AbbVie this past April, which we will highlight today. The core of our company is our cutting-edge technology suite, allowing us to create targeted antibodies with highly differentiated features on both the V region side and the Fc side of the molecule. And finally, as I mentioned in my introduction, we are in a very strong financial position thanks to the non-dilutive funding from AbbVie and our recent private placements. we're very well positioned to execute on our business plan and push our lead pipeline products through to the intended phase two value inflection points. This brings me to slide six, where I would like to further describe our business plan and how we intend to prioritize our capital. Our business model is driven by our ability to develop highly differentiated therapeutic antibodies stemming from our simple antibody platform and Fc engineering technology. Our antibodies are built to address novel targets or targets that have been difficult to undertake by conventional discovery methods. We play across the value chain of drug development from antibody discovery through to clinical proof of concept studies. We manage our pipeline programs to capture value from each at optimal times in their clinical development. We have strategic discovery alliances with Shire and through our Innovative Access Program, where we may have the potential to build new pipeline programs out of breaking research from academic labs and smaller biotech companies. We have developed a niche in oncology and autoimmune indications and want to focus on programs where we believe we have the capabilities to progress them to clinical POC. With this plan in mind, we have partnered certain assets in the preclinical stage because they may target a therapeutic area outside of oncology or autoimmune, or because we felt we needed the benefits of a larger strategic partner to bring the products to clinical POC. By partnering certain assets, it also allows us to focus on our core programs, Argenx 113 and Argenx 110. We expect that bringing our core programs through to clinical POC will be a major value driver for our shareholders. We expect the phase two studies in both of these programs to kick off by the end of this year, with key value inflection points achieved in 2017. Slide 7 provides an overview of our pipeline, which you will see is very well balanced between those we fully own at the top and our partnered assets at the bottom. Each of our fully owned programs are approaching the end of phase one development and the start of phase two proof of concept testing. We provided updates on all of the programs during the last quarter, which I will summarize on the call. For 113, we recently provided an update on the second and last portion of the phase one study in healthy volunteers. For Argenx 110, we provided an update on our T-cell lymphoma safety expansion cohort at EHA. And for 111, we provided an update at ASCO. We expect our highly productive discovery engine to continue to fuel our pipeline and create highly differentiated programs against novel targets in cancer and autoimmune indications. If you then look at the lower half of the schematic, these are our partner programs, including 115, which we recently partnered with AbbVie and is already off to a great start. Another partnered asset is Argenx 109, a highly potent IL-6 antibody equipped with one of our proprietary Fc engineering technologies called ENHANCE. This asset is partnered with Bertrock Bio, who announced earlier this year encouraging phase one data, suggesting the possibility of a low, infrequent dosing in RA patients. Our Leo and Shire alliances progress according to plan, and we have ended our collaboration with Bayer after completing all research under the exclusive product license option agreement. This collaboration started in May 2014 and further validated the simple antibody platform in the context of delivering diverse panels of high-affinity human antibodies against some of the industry's most challenging complex targets. We will redeploy resources from the Bayer collaboration to port our own proprietary programs as well as fuel the innovative access programs. I'd like now to dive into our lead autoimmune compound, Argenx 113, on slide 9. This drug candidate has the potential to be a breakthrough therapy for the treatment of IgG-mediated autoimmune diseases by addressing flares of exacerbations more effectively. Autoimmune diseases occur when the body's immune system turns on itself, and with this, the presence of pathogenic IgGs. While levels are typically controlled during an autoimmune flare or crisis, there is a rapid spike requiring therapeutic intervention to normalize. First-line therapy includes corticosteroids and other immunosuppressants, and when those are not effective, patients are treated with IVIG or plasma exchange, and in some cases, rituximab. Argenx 113 has the potential to improve upon these treatments, as it has demonstrated the ability to reduce IgG levels more quickly and to keep these IgG levels down for longer periods of time, as represented by the red arrow. On slide 10, we lay out the mechanism of Argenx 113, which is an antagonist to the recycling receptor FcRn. Pathogenic IgGs typically enjoy a long circulation time in the human body because they escape intracellular degradation when the Fc region of IgG interacts with FcRn. On the left is the structure of Argenx 113, an antibody Fc region equipped with our proprietary ABDEC mutations. These mutations dramatically increase the affinity of the molecule for FcRn, effectively blocking the receptor and making it unavailable to IgGs, as is shown at the bottom of the middle picture. The right-hand picture shows the effect of Argenx 113 on IgG levels, specifically when injected into non-human primates. You can see IgG levels drop fast and remain low as long as you continue dosing. While Argenx 113 has the potential to reduce pathogenic IgG levels in any autoimmune disease that is mediated by this type of autoantibody, we want to be strategic in thinking through which indications we want to consider for phase 2 trials. On slide number 11, we summarize the process we followed for indication selection for Argenx 113. As I just mentioned, our drug works to lower IgG levels, so first and foremost, we must ensure there is an unequivocal link between the presence of autoantibodies and disease state. In other words, diseases for which there is a clinical proof that exacerbations go hand in hand with pathogenic IgG increases and remissions go hand in hand with pathogenic IgG reductions. Secondly, we prioritize diseases where there is a clear clinical and regulatory development path going forward. This has led to our focus on orphan indications where the development process is efficient and economically viable. Finally, we want to focus our proof of concept studies on indications that will carry significant weight with regards to other adjacent indications. We want there to be a clear correlation for physicians to use the drug in other conditions characterized by autoimmune exacerbations. Using these criteria, we have already picked myasthenia gravis as a first proof of concept indication, and we will discuss a second indication during our R&D day coming up on September 22nd. We're very excited to study 113 in myasthenia gravis, and have also gotten positive feedback from physicians, saying that Argenx 113 would offer a very attractive therapeutic option. The unmet needs associated with currently available therapies for MG are clear. Physicians express a need for a therapy with a faster onset than IVIG, a shorter administration time with better tolerability, and of course, greater efficacy. The next slide, slide 12, provides an overview of the ongoing clinical work we're doing for Argenx 113 in healthy volunteers. We have almost completed the multiple ascending dose portion of the phase 1 study, and based on the data to date, we have selected the dose and the dosing regimen for the phase 2 proof of concept study. The interim look at data on slide 13 shows the biological activity data, which are accompanied by a favorable safety and tolerability profile. PD effects, as measured by IgG reduction, match or exceed the non-human primate data I showed earlier when it comes to speed, depth, and duration of IgG reduction. In fact, we have observed total IgG reduction up to 85%. Slide 14 lays out the next steps. As you can see, we're on track to initiate the first proof of concept study in MG patients before the end of the year, and we plan to launch into a second POC study shortly thereafter. Moving on to our lead oncology product, Argenx 110, our simple antibody targeting CD70. Our collaborating KOL, Dr. Oxenbein, has done significant translational research demonstrating the overexpression of the CD27-CD70 pathway in both B and T-cell lymphomas and leukemias. To date, much of our clinical study has been focused on T-cell lymphomas, where very little progress has been made in recent decades in extending survival rates, in contrast to B-cell lymphomas. Argenx FrontEnd is currently being studied in an ongoing phase 1b expansion cohort in patients with relapsed refractory TCL. So far, 14 CTCL and PTCL patients have been enrolled in the study, and we intend to enroll up to 10 of each subset. On slide 17, we lay out some data from 9 T-cell lymphoma patients who were dosed prior to the start of the ongoing T-cell lymphoma safety expansion cohorts. Clinical and or biological activity was seen in 4 of the 9 patients, including a partial response in 1 PTCL patient and 1 CTCL patient, a complete response in a CTCL patient, specifically with Sézary syndrome, and the reduction of Sézary markers in 1 CTCL patient. One needs to realize that these patients were all CD70 positive and were all relapsed refractory, having undergone many lines of prior therapy. We find the monotherapy activity of 110 across the skin, blood, and lymph compartments encouraging, and I would refer to the ASH presentation from last December, which can be found on our website for further detail. On slide 18 are the next steps with regards to Argenx 110. We expect to have top-line data from the whole T-cell lymphoma cohort by the end of 2016. During our R&D day on September 22nd, we will take a closer look at the interim data of this open-label study and will also talk through the design of the combination study of Argenx 110 and an HDAC inhibitor, which we intend to start this year. We also intend to initiate the first combination trial of 110 in newly diagnosed acute myeloid leukemia patients in the second half of 2016. The decision to design a study in this indication is based on preclinical data generated by our collaborators at Inselspital in Bern, highlighting the role of CD70-CD27 pathway in leukemic stem cell biology. We will also highlight this trial design during our R&D day in September. Now on to Argenx 111, a simple antibody against the well-studied target c-MET. We have a phase 1b safety expansion cohort ongoing in MET-amplified end-stage cancer patients, and we presented interim data around the ASCO conference in June. As I mentioned at the start of the call, we will be wrapping up the phase 1b safety expansion cohort and positioning the asset for partnering prior to the start of phase 2. On slide 20, you will see the mechanism of Argenx 111. The molecule is unique in its targeting of c-MET in that it completely blocks the receptor, depriving tumor cells of key metastasis and proliferation signals. Importantly, it also blocks c-MET completely without dimerizing and activating the receptor, which has been historically the key issue with antibody therapies targeting c-MET. The antibody is equipped with 2 of our Fc engineering technologies: autelligent, allowing cell killing of primary tumor cells, circulating tumor cells, and MET-positive myeloid-derived suppressor cells, and also enhance, allowing the molecule to deeply penetrate the target tissues. We have been encouraged by the molecule's activity to date, and you can see on the chart on slide 21 that we have 1 PR and 6 stable diseases following Argenx 111 monotherapy in 19 enrolled terminally ill patients in the dose escalation study. In the ongoing safety expansion cohort in MET-amplified patients, slide 22, we continue to see biological activity for the drug in monotherapy. Despite this, we do not feel we can feasibly tackle the likely size of the phase 2 studies required in larger cancer indications like breast, lung, or GI cancers. Strategically, it makes more sense for a larger partner to move the molecule forward while we devote our resources to pushing Argenx 110 and 113 through proof-of-concept studies. Before turning the call over to Eric for our financial updates, I'd like to discuss our partnering strategy, starting with 115, our simple antibody targeting the novel immune checkpoint GARP. We understand Argenx 115 to work by reactivating the body's immune system to cancer by ultimately inhibiting the immunosuppressive activity of T-regs. In April, we announced a strategic deal with AbbVie for the exclusive option to license 115. Under the terms of the agreement, we will continue to drive the program forward through IND-enabling studies, after which AbbVie will have a predefined window to exercise its option to acquire the global development and commercialization rights to the program. We are particularly proud of the deal, given the highly beneficial financial and commercial terms to Argenx. Two key aspects are that we maintain access to the drug to combine with potential other proprietary programs that will come from our discovery engine, and that AbbVie has the option to fund further research on GARP for a two-year period and will have the right to license new therapeutic programs emerging from the work. I will close out my section on slide 27. As we discussed at the start of the call, partnering is a core part of our business plan, and we are firmly committed to our innovative access program, which is responsible for the discovery of Argenx 115 out of the UCL de Duve Institute in Belgium. Under this program, we seek out leading academic and novel biotech parties for collaboration in order to access unprecedented disease biology, which we can drug with our proprietary suite of antibody technologies. In total, we now have four IAP programs running, and we aim to add a few additional ones in the coming quarters. Together with our in-house discovery activities, we believe the IAP will play a crucial role in fueling our proprietary product pipeline. With that, I will now turn the call over to our CFO, Eric Castaldi, for him to walk through the financials.
Thank you, Tim. So we're going to start with the slide number 29. As you can see on this slide, our financial results reflect principally research and development expenses and operating income. Operating income for the first half of 2016 nearly doubled to reach 7 million euros at the end of June 2016, compared to an operating income of 4.3 million for the same period in 2015. This significant increase is explained by notably the deferred revenue recognized from the collaboration agreement signed with AbbVie in April 2016, and also the milestone payment received in February 2016 from the collaboration with Leo Pharma. Research and development expenses for the first half of 2016 were 11.3 million euros, compared to 9.3 million euros for the same period in 2015. The increase in R&D expenses in the first 6 months of 2016 correspond principally to the recruitment of additional R&D personnel and especially clinical people in relation to the increased R&D activities, and the share-based payment cost recognized in compensation for the grant of stock options to R&D employees. For the first 6 months of 2016, general and administrative expenses were 3.1 million euros compared to 2.3 million euros for the same period in 2015. The increase in G&A expenses in the first half of 2016 is principally explained by the increase of personal expenses related to the employees recruited to strengthen the group's G&A activities, and also the share-based payment cost recognized in compensation for the grant of stock options to G&A employees. As a result, as you can see on this slide, we reported a net loss of 7.4 million euros during the first 6 months of 2016, compared to a net loss of 7 million euros for the same period of 2015. We close out the first half of 2016 with a very strong cash position of 108.7 million euros, including cash, cash equivalents, and financial assets. The significant increase in our cash position in the first semester of 2016 was driven by two things: the two private placements completed in January and June 2016 with predominantly US institutional investors for a total gross proceeds of almost 46 million euros, and also the upfront payment of $40 million received following the signature of the collaboration agreement with AbbVie in April 2016. If we move to the next slide, slide 30, this slide shows that so far we have been very capital efficient in managing our activities. You see here a reconciliation of our various sources of funding, as well as the cumulative operating expenses for the group from inception to the cash left at the end of June 2016. The group, as you know, has a business model which relies heavily on outsourcing its R&D activities through external collaborations. Therefore, most of our operating expenses are variable expenses. Most of our spending is towards our R&D efforts, with a cumulative amount of 73.7 million euros spent since inception. Our cumulative G&A expenses are relatively low and reflect our lean and efficient structure. As of June 30, 2016, our headcount is 60, including our consultants. With 108.7 million euros in cash at the end of June 2016, we believe that we are well capitalized to execute on our strategic plan with the objective to take our product portfolio to clinical proof of concept. We will continue to focus our spending on our clinical development pipeline, notably on 113 and 110. And in parallel, we will continue to advance and expand the preclinical product pipeline focused on accessing novel targets and technologies. To conclude, you will see at the bottom of this slide our fully diluted shareholding structure as of the end of July 2016. As a result of the two private placements completed in the first half of 2016, we have reduced our VC overhang to about 37.5% of the outstanding shares, compared to 73% at the time of the IPO 2 years ago. We will continue to work on the transition of our shareholders' base from historical venture capital investors to blue-chip, long-term institutional investors, and also work on increasing the liquidity and free float of our stock. And now I will turn the call back to Tim.
Thank you, Eric. I would like to conclude with a few important milestones before turning the call over for your questions. 2016 has already been a very productive year for us, and we will continue this momentum with strong news flow through the third and fourth quarters of the year. For Argenx 110, we anticipate the start of the first combo study, which will be a phase 1/2 study in the fourth quarter of the year, whilst we continue to read out the open-label safety expansion study in 20 T-cell lymphoma patients. We expect to have more data to present from the T-cell lymphoma cohort at ASH this year. For Argenx 113, we will complete the phase 1 healthy volunteer study imminently and expect to initiate the first phase 2 proof-of-concept study in MG before the end of the year. We are very eager to update you on our progress on all of our programs in the coming months, and more specifically at our R&D Day on September 22nd in New York. And with this, I would like to hand over to the audience for questions.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you can press star 1 on your telephone keypad, or alternatively, you can submit your question via the WebEx Q&A. And you have an audio question that comes from the line of Ted Tenthoff from Piper Jaffray. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you very much. And, Tim, thanks for the thorough update. My first question had to do with 110, and I wanted to get a sense about how maybe some of the competitive updates in T-cell lymphoma have impacted either enrollment or maybe your thinking about where 110 fits into the treatment paradigm.
Hi, Ted. Thanks for joining the call. It's very much appreciated. With regards to the competitive landscape on Argenx 110, I would like to say that T-cell lymphoma continues to represent a major medical need. There are quite a few therapies out there, Ted, but they are all characterized by relatively short response durations. And there's a real need for safe biologics which can be used to combine with these agents in order to go to more durable responses. During our R&D day on the 22nd, Dr. Owen O'Connor is going to explain his vision for the T-cell lymphoma space, where actually he will draw the analogy with rituximab in B-cell lymphomas. Mm-hmm. The T-cell lymphomas badly need a safe biological to be combined with, for example, the HDAC inhibitors, which are currently approved. Enrollment in the study is actually going satisfactorily. We're working with 6 expert centers in Europe, and the fact that we are swiftly recruiting patients to the study means that physicians are pretty excited by the profile of Argenx 110 so far.
That's really helpful. And then if I may, one quick follow-up question on 113. Looking forward to more data at the R&D Day in New York. But I guess my question is a little bit more of a biological one with respect to, do we see heightened levels of Ig in myasthenia gravis patients and other autoimmune patients? And from sort of the kinetic dynamic work that you've seen from the healthies, do you think you'll be able to knock down enough to have a clinical, to achieve a clinical effect?
There is quite a bit of evidence that that's from the published literature, showing that in clinical practice, the current treatments like IVIG and plasma exchange lead to a reduction of pathogenic IgG levels between anywhere between 30 and 60%. IVIG 30%, PLEX around 60%, which takes a few weeks to get there. And we know that such a reduction puts patients in remission. What we can say from the healthy volunteer work is that 113 has the potential to push IgG levels down very quickly, all the way down to 85%. So it's going to be very exciting to study in phase two studies how this will translate into clinical efficacy.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Looking forward to the data.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next audio question comes from the line of David Nierengarten. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. I was wondering, and I'm sure you'll touch on this at the R&D day, but if the recent experience of Alexion's clinical trial and of eculizumab or Soliris and myasthenia gravis had any effect on your thoughts about the clinical trial design, and also as part of that, if there were any effects that you were seeing with investigators on their willingness to use a new investigative agent, or if they were using Soliris off-label, or you know if that was changing the disposition of the patients that you were as you talk with potential clinical trial sites. Thanks.
Thank you, David. Thanks for joining. Actually, we will have James Howard as a KOL talking on the 22nd of September. James was the lead PI on the phase 3 Soliris study, so he's probably best placed to address the question. What I can say from our view is that actually we greatly benefit from the fact that Alexion has put MG so clearly on the map. Now everybody knows about the disease, the magnitude of the unmet medical needs, and actually the demand for innovation. In addition, I think the analyst reports clearly show that MG is an economically viable indication as an orphan drug indication. I think the other important thing about the Soliris trial is that the data confirm that IgG-mediated complement activation plays a significant role in the disease, which is actually validating our approach to eliminate antibodies which recruit complements. From a differentiation and recruitment point of view, you need to remember that the Soliris trial was targeting relapsed refractory MG patients, which is quite difficult to recruit. That's why we believe it took them 3 years to recruit the study. We're actually going to try and enroll patients much more upstream in the treatment paradigm. And I will be happy to elaborate on that during the R&D day.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And our next audio question comes from the line of Suzanne van Voorthuizen. And please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. This is Suzanne. Thank you for taking my question. I have only one. Now that the company is increasing its R&D activities for further clinical development of the proprietary pipeline, could you, to the extent that it's possible, give some color on how your cash burn will develop going forward?
Erik, do you want to take that question?
Absolutely. We are currently working on the design of the clinical programs, as Tim said, for notably 113. What we can say today, so it's going to really highly depend on the design of what we're going to do next year, notably for the phase 2 programs. But currently what we can say is that our current cash runway should be sufficient to take us through our current plans for the initial phase 2 studies on Argenx 113 and 110.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question comes from the line of Roderick Verhulst. Please go ahead.
thank you for taking my questions. I have a couple smaller ones. The first one is on 113. I want to zoom in a bit more on the selection. I know that you're going to announce it in R&D Day, but I just want to figure out how you selected the second indication, because a lot of the indications that are in the list that you summarized there are characterized by really chronic diseases where there's a steady concentration of IgG and less often crisis events. So how do I look at it? Do you really want to have an indication where you have the very clear crises happening, or do you also consider indications where you have more constant concentration, if you want to call it like that, that you want to moderate the disease like that? Second question is on 111. You in the past you always indicated that you would partner it. It's repeated in this press release. Do you think that the data package that you currently have will be strong enough to attract partners? If you looking back, I mean, CMET was not the easiest target with a lot of failures. So just want to see if you could give some color on that. Well, that's it for me. Thanks.
Thank you, Roderick, for joining the call and asking these questions. I think that the second indication we will discuss during the R&D day is a very complementary indication to MG. It's equally well characterized by the dominant role of pathogenic IgGs, but it's a somewhat different disease because it's a more chronic indication compared to MG. And this all goes back to very substantial amounts of market research which we have been doing during the indication selection, where we have been in the field interviewing treating physicians for a number of these indications. And it becomes very clear to us that just niching Argenx 113 in a corner where you would only treat it for acute exacerbations or flares is far too limiting. The unmet medical needs, the clinician's frustration, all boils down to the need for a safe biological, which can even be used for semi-chronic management of the patients. So I will be very happy to elaborate on that during the R&D day, but we're basically going to project detailed treatment paradigms for the indications we selected and how and where we think 113 could fit in the treatment paradigm. And I think you will be pleased to see that whilst we started to think about 113 as a replacement for IVIG in a more acute setting, its real potential may actually sit in a broader market. Back to 111, can we partner the program? It's an important question. You will only learn it by testing the market. It is true that CMET to a certain extent, a burn space by high-profile failures from the Genentech and the Amgen programs. It is interesting, though, to see that our understanding of CMET biology continues to evolve significantly. And I feel that, you know, we have achieved a tipping point where people now understand it's all about MET amplification rather than CMET overexpression. And I do believe that we have a chance to partner the program for combination therapies with, for example, next-generation EGFR or HER2 antagonists. But we should manage our expectations. This is certainly not going to be an easy deal to do, and we will need to take the time to find a suitable partner.
Okay, maybe a follow-on. So how do I look at it going forward if it takes too long to find a suitable partner? Do you even consider it taking it to the next stage, or is it rather an option to shelve it or a partner, one or two?
Well, we will be very disciplined. The fact that we have a product portfolio allows us to make rational choices in the portfolio. We have clearly earmarked Argenx 113 and Argenx 110 as the two products we want to take forward on our own dollar, and we will stick to that plan. So for 111, we will stop spending on the program. It will walk down the partnering path, but we will not continue to invest in it.
Okay, very clear. Looking forward to the R&D day. Thanks.
Thank you, Roderick.
Thank you. And we have one question on the WebEx. Would you like me to read that out for you?
Donna, I will read it, okay?
Thank you.
So, Tim, we have a question from Tom Schroeder. He sent a question online. Do you believe 113 is most appropriate for acute IgE-related diseases? In other words, do you expect there would be a duration limit for giving the drug?
Yeah, it goes a little bit back, Tom. Thanks for joining us. It's highly appreciated. It goes back a little bit to our own progressive understanding on the market potential for 113. On the onset, the most logical way to view the clinical utility of a program like Argenx 113 is indeed the management of acute exacerbations or even a crisis. That's a logical one. The market research which we have been doing, and that's quite a substantial amount of work, actually suggests that there is no reason to box ourselves into such a niche, but there is actually a broader potential for 113 to control IgG levels and pathogenic IgG levels in a more chronic setting, which, by the way, we believe would be safe to do, because, remember, we are not touching any other compartments of the immune system. We're not touching IgA levels. We're not touching IgM levels. We're certainly not touching complement. And based on the human genetic information which is out there, we know that natural knockouts of FcRn actually do not suffer from an increased rate of infection. So whilst increased rate of infection is a significant concern for rituximab treatment in autoimmune indications, it seems like this could be a much more focused way to deal with autoimmune diseases.
Okay, thank you, Tim.
Thank you. Once again, that's star one for an audio question, or you can submit any other questions via WebEx. We appear to have no further questions coming through at this time. Please continue.
So if there are no further questions, no online questions, and no questions via the phone, I would like to conclude the call here. Thank you very much for your attendance and for all the questions. We are really looking forward to speak to you, and hopefully we can see you at our R&D Day on the 22nd of September in New York. And I wish you all a nice weekend and goodbye.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.